All right, let's dive into Genesis 1. We're looking at a lecture today on Old Testament history, and it really digs into the meaning behind the creation account. You know, it's not just the story we all know.
Yeah, this one goes way deeper. Uncovers some pretty surprising stuff, actually.
So it's more than just, okay, day one, this happened. Day two, that happened. It's like, what's the author trying to tell us about God, humanity, and the whole universe?
It's setting the stage for the entire Old Testament, really.
Yeah.
Laying out the groundwork for how we understand everything that comes after.
Okay, I'm ready to have my mind blown.
Uh-huh. Well, let's see. The lecture highlights four key things about God that are, like, right there from the start. First off, God just exists.
It's not up for debate.
Right. It's assumed. It's like, okay, we all agree on that. Yeah. Let's move on to the interesting stuff.
Makes sense. And it's not just any God either, right?
No, no.
It's one God.
Monotheism. One God, not a whole bunch of them like in other ancient Near Eastern religions.
Like those pantheons with all the squabbling gods and goddesses.
Exactly. Totally different vibe in Genesis.
It's a big deal. Like this one God created everything.
And that's the second point. He's all powerful. He doesn't need help from anyone or anything. He speaks and it happens.
Ooh, it even quotes Hebrews 11.3 here. By faith, we understand that the universe was formed at God's command. Man, that's a powerful image.
It's not just, you know, rolling up his sleeves and getting his hands dirty. It's the power of his word that brings everything into being.
And the lecture actually quotes this scholar, G. Ernst Wright, a big name in Old Testament studies, who says that the biblical God is totally unique, like totally different from the gods of other ancient religions.
Yeah, he uses this fancy term, sui generis, meaning one of a kind.
You can't trace this God back to some earlier, you know, less developed God. He's not an evolved version of anything. He's something completely new.
Like a category all his own.
Okay, so we've got this one-of-a-kind, all-powerful God, and he's not just hanging out somewhere in the universe.
No, this is where it gets even cooler.
This is the fourth point. He's separate from his creation. He's not a nature God who's like part of the trees or the rocks or whatever.
Right, he's not like the sky god or the earth goddess or the river spirit. He transcends all of that.
He's not bound by his creation.
Exactly. And that's a big contrast to what a lot of other ancient cultures believed.
So we've talked about God, what he's like, how he relates to the universe. But what about the universe itself? What does Genesis tell us about that?
Some pretty interesting stuff, actually. Things that people might not expect. First of all, the universe isn't, you know, divine itself.
Like it's not made of God stuff.
Right. It's made by God. But it's not God.
Yeah.
It has a beginning. It's a separate creation.
Which seems obvious to us now. Hmm. But back then, a lot of people thought the universe was either like a God itself or maybe something that came directly out of God, like his breath or his thoughts or something.
Yeah, Genesis is presenting a totally different picture.
The universe is distinct from God, even though it was created by him.
Right. And then another interesting thing. The universe is inherently good. Remember how Genesis keeps repeating, God saw that it was good?
Oh, yeah.
That's huge. It's not saying that the physical world is evil or something to be escaped from.
Like some religions believe.
Yeah, it's good. It's part of God's good creation.
I mean, it really makes you think, what does good even mean in this context? Good for what? Good in what way?
Good questions. What's God's standard for judging his own creation? What are his criteria?
Yeah. And then the lecture points out that the universe isn't just a chaotic mess, right?
Not at all.
It's orderly. There are stages. God doesn't just fling things around randomly. There's a structure to it.
A plan.
Yeah, a plan.
And that orderliness, it suggests that the universe, even in its earliest form, has purpose. It's designed. There are laws and principles at work from the very beginning.
So we've got God, we've got the universe, but where do we fit in? Where do humans come in?
That's the best part.
Yeah.
And that's where we'll pick up next time.
All right. So back to Genesis 1. Last time we were looking at what this lecture says about God and the universe. But what about us? Where do humans fit into all of this?
Well, Genesis 1 is very specific about that.
Yeah.
Humans have a very unique role. And it's not just, you know, oh, we're the most evolved species. It's way more than that.
Like God didn't create bacteria, then jellyfish, then chimpanzees, and finally, like, humans. Like, we're just the next step up the evolutionary ladder.
Not exactly, no. The lecture is saying humans are created beings, just like everything else.
We're not, like, self-existent or anything.
No, we have a beginning. God created us.
Oh, okay, so we're part of creation, but we're also kind of set apart, right?
Exactly. We're created on the sixth day, after everything else.
Like the grand finale of Creation Week.
Exactly. It's like the climax of the whole thing. And there's another thing too, remember?
Oh yeah, the image of God. That's a big one.
Huge. But what does it even mean?
Yeah, I always hear that phrase and I'm like, yeah, image of God, sure. But what does it actually mean for us? Like, how does that set us apart?
Well, there are a lot of different interpretations, but the lecture is suggesting it's not just, you know, we look like God or something.
Yeah, because God's not walking around with a beard and sandals.
Right, exactly. It's more about our abilities, our capacity for things like, you know, relationships, creativity, moral reasoning, stuff that reflects God's own nature.
So it's like we're mini gods.
Not mini gods, exactly. Remember, we're still created beings. We're distinct from God. But we have this ability to, like, mirror him, to act as his representatives.
Okay, that makes sense. And part of that, I guess, is that whole dominion thing.
Yeah. Genesis talks about humans having dominion over animals and subduing the earth.
Which sounds a little harsh, like, especially these days with climate change and everything.
It's important to think about the context, you know? Dominion here isn't about, like, exploiting the earth or abusing animals.
Right.
It's more like responsible stewardship.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we're supposed to take care of things.
Yeah, we're supposed to care for the earth and the creatures on it, not just use them up.
So less like a dictator and more like a gardener.
Yeah, more like a gardener. Nurturing things, helping them to thrive.
That makes sense. So we're created in God's image. We have this responsibility to care for the earth. There's a lot to unpack there. But there's one verse, just one verse, that's caused a ton of debate.
Genesis 1.1.
Yeah, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. It seems so simple, but trust me, it gets complicated.
It's pretty amazing that just one verse can cause so much discussion.
Right. So the big question is Genesis 1.1 its own statement? Or is it the start of a longer sentence that goes into verse 2? And believe it or not, it's all about grammar.
Yeah, the lecture talks about two main interpretations, and they depend on how you see that first phrase grammatically.
Mm-hmm.
Is it independent or subordinate?
So think about it like this. Is it a headline or the first part of a sentence?
Exactly. And it makes a big difference in how we understand what's happening in those first few verses. And then to make things even more complicated.
But there's more.
Oh, yeah. There are debates about the ancient translations and even the Masoretic accents.
Wait, what?
The Masoretic accents.
Yeah.
They're like these little markings in the Hebrew text. They can help us understand the structure of the sentences.
So it's like we're detectives searching for clues.
Kind of.
Mm-hmm.
We're trying to figure out the meaning of this one verse.
So what happens if we read Genesis 1.1 as a complete statement? What are the possibilities?
Well, the lecture gives us three options. First, it could be a summary statement, like a headline for the whole chapter. That's how the NIV Study Bible reads it.
Okay, but then why does verse 2 sound so chaotic?
Exactly. If God just created everything perfectly in verse 1, then why does verse 2 say the earth was without form and void? It doesn't sound very perfect, does it?
Yeah, it's like saying, okay, I built this beautiful house, but actually it's a pile of rubble. Doesn't really make sense.
Right. So option number 2,
Yeah. Maybe
verse 1, is talking about creation ex nihilo.
Which is Latin for
creation out of nothing. So this view sees verse 1 as the moment God creates everything from nothing. And then verse 2 is like the state of the universe before he starts organizing things.
So God creates the raw materials in verse 1, and then verse 2 is like those materials just sitting there waiting for him to do something with them.
Yeah, like a blank canvas.
Okay, that makes more sense. So what's the third option?
Well, maybe verse 1 is describing the creation of matter.
Like the building blocks of the universe.
Exactly. Heavens and earth represent the basic unformed stuff that everything's made of.
Okay, so not the actual heavens and earth we know, but like the raw material for them.
Right. And, you know, a lot of ancient creation myths actually talk about this kind of like primordial chaos or formless void.
Really?
Yeah. Think about it. You've got the swirling waters or the dark abyss or whatever. This idea that God shapes pre-existing matter into the world we know, it's not just a biblical thing.
So Genesis might be using that same kind of imagery. Interesting.
Yeah. The lecturer mentions this scholar, G.C.H. Alders. He really supports this view of verse 1.
So he thinks verse 1 is about creating the stuff, and then in verse 2, God starts doing something with that stuff.
Exactly. And that makes the transition to verse 2 make a lot more sense.
Okay, so we've got three options if verse 1 is his own statement. But what if it's not? What if it's the start of a longer sentence?
Ah, then things get even more interesting.
Bring it on.
So in Hebrew, the first word of the Bible, Bereshit, can be understood in two different ways.
Okay, hit me with some Hebrew grammar.
Okay, so it can be absolute, which would mean in the beginning, making it an independent clause. But it can also be construct, which would mean something more like when God began to create.
So the whole thing hinges on how you read that first word.
Right. And the lecture mentions that both the Masoretic texts, you know, which is the authoritative Hebrew text of the Bible.
Yeah, yeah.
And also ancient translations, they seem to favor the absolute state, the independent clause.
So case closed.
Well, not so fast. There are still some scholars who think it should be read as a subordinate clause. And if it is, that opens up two more possibilities.
Ooh, more options. Lay them on me.
Okay, so the first one is that the verse 1 is subordinate to verse 2. So you read it like this. When God began to create the heavens and the earth was without form and void.
Okay, so that raises the question, was the earth already messed up before God started creating? Or is that just how it looked before he shaped it?
Exactly. It's like, which came first?
Yeah.
The chaos or the creation?
Deep. Okay, what's the second possibility?
This one's a little, well, let's just say it's a bit more creative grammatically. Some scholars say that verse 2 is actually like a parenthesis.
A what?
Like a side comment. So you read verse 1, then verse 2 is this little interruption, and then verse 3 picks up where verse 1 left off. It'd be like this. When God began to create the heavens and the earth, now this earth, it was a pretty messy place at first.
Mm.
Then God said, let there be light.
Whoa, that's a lot of punctuation. Kind of a weird way to read it, right?
Yeah, it's definitely unique. But hey, the Bible can be weird. Why not?
True. Okay, so that's a lot of different ways to read just one verse. Summary statement. Creation out of nothing. Creation of matter. Subordinate clause. Even a parenthesis. My brain is officially fried.
It's a lot to think about. But that's what's so cool about it. It shows how much depth there is in the Bible. There's not always one right answer.
And it makes you realize that even the simplest sounding verses can be super complicated.
Right. And that's where we get to the next controversy.
Mm-hmm.
The gap theory. This is how some people try to fit a really old earth into the Genesis account. You know, science tells us the earth is billions of years old.
Billions, yeah.
So the gap theory basically says there's this gap of time between verses 1 and 2, like a really, really long gap, maybe even billions of years.
So like God created the earth way back then, and then something happened, and then he started over in verse 2.
That's the idea. And some people even connect this gap to Satan's fall, like maybe his rebellion messed up the original creation.
Oh, wow. So the earth was all messed up because of Satan.
That's what some people believe. But the lecture does mention that the gap theory has some problems. It talks about this book, Unformed and Unfilled, by Weston Fields. He argues against the gap theory.
Why?
He says the Old Testament verses that people use to support the gap theory, they don't actually have to be read that way. They don't necessarily mean there was a gap of billions of years.
So, like, maybe we shouldn't try to force the Bible to match up perfectly with science.
Yeah, I think that's a good takeaway. The Bible isn't a science textbook. It's a different kind of book with a different kind of purpose.
Right. But it does make you think about faith and science and how they fit together. And that brings us to the end, where we talk about what Genesis 1 means for us, how it helps us understand God, humanity, the universe, and our place in it all. Welcome back to our deep dive into Genesis 1. We've been through a lot, haven't we? From God's nature to the universe, humanity's role, and don't even get me started on all those interpretations of that first verse.
Genesis 1.1. Oh yeah, talk about a lot packed into just a few words. It's amazing what a single verse can spark.
Definitely shows you the Bible's not just a simple storybook. It's got layers, like an onion. It makes you think, makes you debate, makes you, well, sometimes makes you scratch your head a bit.
That's the beauty of it though, right?
Yeah.
It keeps us on our toes. And it reminds us that there isn't always just one right answer.
We've seen that for sure. So as we wrap this whole deep dive up, what are some things we want our listeners to really take away from Genesis 1? What's the aha moment here?
I think the biggest one for me is Genesis 1 isn't just a creation story, you know?
It's more than just, okay, here's how the world began.
Right. It's making a statement about God, about us humans, about the entire universe. It's like the foundation for everything else in the Bible.
The blueprint, yeah.
And that blueprint, it contains some incredibly powerful ideas, like the idea of one God, the only God.
Yeah.
And that the world, the physical world, is actually good, not evil. And that we as humans have a unique dignity and responsibility to care for the earth.
Yeah, big stuff. And the lecture really encourages us not to just read Genesis 1 on a surface level.
Right.
It's not just a literal play-by-play of how God made everything in 6 days.
Definitely not.
It's like, it's asking us to think about deeper questions, like what's the relationship between God and creation? What does it mean to be human? What's good? What's evil?
Those questions. They've been around for centuries, and Genesis 1 is still wrestling with them, still relevant, you know.
So for our listeners who maybe never thought about these different interpretations before, what's the most important thing for them to remember?
I'd say approach Genesis 1 with humility. You know, be open to different ideas.
Don't get stuck thinking there's only one way to read it.
Right. Because different interpretations, they can all be valid. Yeah. They can all enrich our understanding in different ways. It's okay to struggle with the questions. It's okay if some things are unclear. That's part of what makes it so fascinating.
And the lecture definitely showed us how much debate there is, even among, you know, real experts who've studied Genesis their whole lives.
Exactly. Mm. And that's good. It means we're still learning, still exploring. It keeps us from getting complacent.
So to wrap things up, one last thought for our listeners. How does thinking about these different interpretations, these different ideas, how does that change how you see the relationship between God, humanity, and the universe?
It's a big question. But it's the heart of it all, isn't it? Keep exploring, keep questioning, and keep discovering. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive into Genesis 1.